Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Today in the show, when you get right down to it, it's all about the incredible power of music. We've all heard that hackneyed phrase, music is a universal language, but today we're going to get specific. For example, did you ever stop to consider the true healing power of the blues? Or what about the ability of music to spark interfaith dialogues? That's right, and those are just some of the heady topics that'll be floating around here today, compliments of the Healing Blues Project's Ted Efremoff and Dave Fox. And Temple Emmanuel, Interfaith Winston-Salem, and Green Street United Methodist Church are all building musical bridges that span faith and racial divisions. Then, before all that We Are the World musical magic subsides, the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society is here to remind us that the thrill is never gone from great blues music. It'll be performed outdoors by some of the world's most accomplished blues artists when the Carolina Blues Festival returns to Greensboro next after this news. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. We've got quite a show for you today. We'll cover music, religion, race, healing, and giving back. Plus, we'll get to wallow, in a good way, in the blues. As a member of the very tail end of the me generation, I'm often inspired by folks who break out of their self-absorbed shells and do their part to make other people's lives better. Jerry McLeese is one of those guys. 2 years ago, Jerry founded Interfaith Winston-Salem, and last summer, he led the effort for Winston-Salem to join the International Compassionate Cities Movement. Mark Strauss-Cohn is the rabbi at Temple Emmanuel in Winston-Salem, and Kelly Carpenter is reverend of Green Street United Methodist Church. About 8 years ago, they brought the Afro-Semitic experience to town for an interfaith weekend of unbelievable jazz and learning. It's a unique jazz group made up of 6 members ranging in color from white to black and in terms of religious heritage from Jewish to Christian to Muslim. The band's music is a unique mix of spiritual, world beat, funk, jazz, cantorial, gospel, salsa, klezmer, soul, and did I miss anything? Now that's what I'm talking about. Anyway, last month the Afro-Semitic experience returned to the Triad to entertain while simultaneously sparking dialogues of tolerance and faith and building bridges of understanding. Kelly, Mark, and Jerry drop by to share stories about how they integrated the Afro-Semitic experience into their own worship and learning experiences.
If I'm alone on the street. All we have to do is look at, if we open up the Book of Psalms, and you can see that all the way back in ancient temple times, in antiquity in Israel, that celebrating God meant singing and getting involved with music, and that goes right up into modernity, that we use music very much in our worship as an expression of praise to God and giving thanks.
For you personally, what's the feeling, the connection you have with music in that setting?
I gave a little explanation the other night. What occurred to me during the service at synagogue is I was playing with the word for music in Hebrew, which is musica. And depending on a little bit how we spell it, it's actually a combination of the words magic, kesem, and Yah, which is a name for God. And so music really is this kind of fusion of magic and God and everything coming together in a beautiful spiritual way.
Wow. I love that. That's a great image. Love that. Kelly, I'm going to throw it your way because the history of music in the church from so many in this country, a melting pot, lots of different areas. And of course, your church famous for the incorporation of jazz in services as well. But going back to even pre-Congo Square, the use of music in the church and just kind of a little church music 101.
Yeah, a little secret that we don't like to talk about as preachers is that the affect is really controlled by the musicians in church, and it is that primary a focus for worship. We like to think that we can evoke the emotional response that's needed from a congregation to, you know, to the word, but the reality is that sometimes that there is a more direct route through the use of music. And so to have a really powerful musical feel actually evokes, you know, the kind of response that oftentimes we're looking for from our congregation. For us, the use of jazz has been not just something that's been unique, but it's been a way to blend some various traditions. We like to look at both, you know, traditional music that have come from European roots, but also blending some African-American traditional music as well. It's been an eye-opening experience to even be introduced to some of the songs at Temple Emmanuel that give a whole nother, it's like a whole nother language. One of the things that Mark and I share is a pianist. Neil Maxey plays at both services, and he's a very fine musician. But when he started playing at Temple Emmanuel on Friday, he said, you know, this is like a whole nother language. It's a whole different kind of way of doing music. And at the same time, it was just a whole nother repertoire. So for him, it really opened up a whole a new dimension in his exploring the spiritual roots of music.
Oh, in so many ways, then, we get into the Afro-Semitic experience, and what a perfect fit it is for all of you all. I want to talk about the series in a second, but first, what's your experience been with regard to music in this idea of walls breaking down or facilitating conversation?
Well, it certainly has that ability to communicate between various traditions. This particular group that came, the Afro-Semitic experience, not only did they combine traditions that came from the African-American community, traditional jazz, but they also combined, Jewish folk music, klezmer music, and they were able to kind of go back and forth in some of those dimensions. But not only did they do that well, they had diversity in their own group. And sometimes, you know, that can cause great problems. You know, bands can be like any other families, just as dysfunctional as anyone else. But this group had a sense of community about them, and it came through not just in their music, but came through in the way in which they had great respect for each other as elders, as coming from each other's traditions. We had a lot of conversation, and some of them would share their conversations about getting ready for Passover. Some of them would share their conversations about what they did in their own faith communities. And so they really had a richness about their own self-understanding and a real sense of respect for their differences. And it came through in their music, but also in reflected in their community.
That image is so powerful of people of different backgrounds, ethnicities, races being together on a bandstand, in much the same way it was almost when Benny Goodman had Lionel Hampton playing vibes for him back right. In the 30s. I mean, it's 2014 now, and yet we're still addressing these issues. Maybe you could address that, Mark. I mean, the need for that sort of symbol and what you're seeing in the synagogue in terms of bridging those gaps.
Well, I think what's been amazing and what we witnessed during the course of this weekend, we were at a lovely Lenten service over at First Baptist Highland Avenue with our colleague, Reverend Daryl Aaron. And you looked in the crowd. First of all, I'm not someone who goes to Lenten services. It's not my ritual. But to look in the crowd and see from white to black in that space, sharing worship together and just time in prayer and the music bridging everybody was just very powerful. And the same thing at a synagogue service, typically on a Friday night, it's a group of Jews, and there might be some visitors from outside who are coming by, but to look at a full range of color and faith traditions, just gathering in praise and prayer and that music bridging, and the same thing at the Palm Sunday service at Green Street. It's a beautiful thing. We really do have different faith traditions, and we have different concepts of what God is, but music kind of spans that gap and allows us to come together and recognize the commonality that we share simply as human beings. And the Afro-Semitic experience very much helps to facilitate that, and we're grateful for it.
What sort of feedback have you all received from members of your various churches in terms of the Afro-Semitic experience, what they saw and heard?
It was just very positive at Green Street. It was kind of overwhelming how much their presence and how much energy that they brought. It was clear that they were drawing on their various traditions that they came out of, and at the same time they were reflecting traditions that were part of our community as well. So it was it was high energy worship service, and it was an interesting worship service because in our tradition we have a Palm Sunday and Passion Sunday is the same Sunday, and so we move a service from great celebration and praise to a time of reflection and kind of recognizing pain and agony that comes with Good Friday, and so we had both sides of those services reflected, and they were able to go deep in both directions, both as a way of celebration and energy, but then also some real darkness and some pathos came out in their music, and that was really, really special.
Mark, I'll throw the question your way as well. I mean, from members of the synagogue, I mean, the reactions you received, and you mentioned your own kind of a learning experience being part of the Palm Sunday service.
Reaction was very positive. we do music all the time, and we love to bring in guests from out of town or elsewhere to help us in our worship. And this just brought us to such an incredible level. And the music is just phenomenal. And I'm someone who loves jazz. And it's some of the best jazz music I've ever heard. And they played for us. They played our liturgy as well as their own music. And it was just a very wonderful experience. And that's what I've heard collectively, the buzz among everyone.
Nice. Well, Jerry, at the bottom of your email to me, you've got justice is compassion raised to an institutional level. I'm wondering what that means to you personally, for starters, and then how you go about raising compassion at an institutional level like that, or what have you seen that's been very effective along those lines?
One of the things we've been trying to do is just raise the awareness of the importance of compassion, because once you start understanding what it is, you start wearing the other fellow's shoes, even when that fellow may have holes in the bottom of his shoes. So you can relate to the other person much more effectively if you put yourself in that person's role.
The ability to empathize, it seems like, I mean, institutionally, you could say that's something we know integrally, just like it's good to share. That's what we teach our kids anyway. And yet so much goes on to counter that in our society. But what do you see as the main obstacles to empathy in our society?
Well, I don't think we're always willing to move outside our own self to look at the other. And I think that's, once you can break through that shell, I really believe you can start to empathize more effectively with other people.
Dr. Carlton Mitchell, and what does the Mitchell Interfaith Series intend to accomplish?
Dr. Mitchell was one of the early leaders in interfaith and interreligious and interracial relationships in this community. He was head of the Department of Religion at Wake Forest for a number of years. He died just over a year ago, but he just had a great influence within so many churches throughout North Carolina in helping them see a little broader than they might have seen otherwise.
I went to school in Chicago, and in my dorm was a young woman from Mississippi, a young white woman from Mississippi who was a freedom fighter back then and went on, got a Rhodes Scholarship, and has done great things building bridges. I've lived in North Carolina for 12 years now. Many of my friends are white males and females who are working hard against racism, and yet that image, it's not what nationally has resonated during my time here. It's an image of the white Southerner who has a biased view. Why are they not at least competing on an equal level in your eyes? And what can be done to change that perception, I guess?
I think one of the things we have tended to have in this community and much through the South is that our Sunday services for Christians determines or defines what our relationships are throughout the week. So we seldom move beyond the silos of that Sunday relationship where we have contact with people who are different from us. And one of the things that we're trying to do, both with the Compassionate Winston-Salem and the Interfaith Winston-Salem programs, is to help people move beyond those barriers that sometimes are artificial to try to build relationships across those barriers.
I play tennis a lot, and that seems like the easiest way for me to get in touch with people of different backgrounds and ethnicities. I mean, after the game, we go out and have a beer, something like that. But how do you go about it? How do you facilitate that dialogue or that just building friendships?
Well, one of the things that I've tried to do, I go to the worship services at the mosque. I go to the temple for worship services. I have friends who are pagan, friends who are Buddhist. So building relationships with individuals who have other traditions, you have to make a conscious effort because quite often your circles do not normally or naturally embrace the people who are different from you.
That's such a great point. You have to make an effort, but the rewards are so great when you do.
One of the interesting things that happened while the Afro-Semitic experience was here at Salem Town, we had a very diverse group of people there as part of the program. And we, at the end of the program, the group asked, the band asked all the people to stand and hold hands and dance. So we had Muslims and Jews and Christians and pagans and people of no tradition up dancing with each other, having the best time they've ever had, I do believe.
That's wonderful. What a great image. I like that. The whole bringing this together, as you alluded to earlier, was a huge team effort. Could you rattle off, I mean, the number of different parties involved in making this concert series happen?
The faith communities that helped us both financially and also as a way of publicizing it included Knollwood Baptist Church, First Baptist Church Highland Avenue, St. Anne's Episcopal Church, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Green Street Methodist, and then Temple Emmanuel. And then of course, Interfaith Winston-Salem and Winston-Salem United Jewish Appeal. So there was a lot of different components to kind of bring them all here. But the three of us kind of did the logistics. And in fact, we probably spoke to each other so much we're ready to take a break.
This interview.
That's a perfect segue. We're done here.
One thing about the Afro-Semitic experience, they were here before, back in 2006, and that was a project that Mark and I worked on together. What was interesting about the difference is that they've changed a little bit. They've expanded some. They've expanded their repertoire. They have lots of different kinds of music. They have more of a funk feel. They're singing more. Before, it was mostly just very traditional instrumental music. So their collaboration has sort of grown, and sort of their and their community has. And so it's reflected in some of their newer music. And the energy that they bring is really powerful. It's very infectious.
One of the things that I noted during their time here is that they're each totally distinct individuals. And actually, they play in bands on their own, separate and outside of the Afro-Semitic experience. And they maintain their individuality while they're performing with each other, and yet they completely blend, and they make this music together in a wonderful, wonderful way.
I caught up with Afro-Semitic Experience co-founder, bassist David Shevin, by phone from his studio in Connecticut. Hey, David, just for starters, some of your early on big musical influences.
Charles Mingus, Charlie Hayden, a lot of sort of obvious jazz guys. I was really into Scotty LaFaro for a very long time.
Those are three huge ones. I had the great privilege to hear, I guess, Charlie Hayden in concert with the Liberation Orchestra when he was in Minneapolis.
Yeah, you see, the Liberation Orchestra really was a game changer for me.
How so?
I remember reading about the Liberation Orchestra, and I was so attracted to the idea of what I read about the use of Spanish Civil War songs and just basically a less traditional approach to jazz than I'd been experiencing. And I happened to be, you know, flipping through the cutout bin at the local record store, and there was the Ballad of the Fallen for sale at the record store. And that album, just, I put it on, and within the first listen, I mean, it really was just right then and there, I was like, this is how we should be making music. A group that's tightly arranged and doing really complex things, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of something tightly arranged, complex, sophisticated, they jump into free improvisation. And then they so easily segue out of it, and they move smoothly from a piece that has a very, very clear Spanish element going on in it to something that's a little bit more swing. In other words, they kept genre jumping all over the place.
In order to pull it off and have it not sound derivative, you've got to have chops, and you got to be completely dedicated to it. And the Afro-Semitic experience really, I think, walks that fine line in a really beautiful way.
Well, thank you. I think also, you know, I listened to that album a long time ago, and so I've certainly matured as both a player and a person since then. But, you know, that certainly was one of many musical works that left an indelible mark on me, both as a player and also just in terms of like my own personal musical philosophy, you know, where my values lie as a musician.
There was a time when peace was on the earth, and joy and happiness did reign, and each man knew his worth. In my heart, how I yearn for that spirit's return, and I cry as time flies. Oh.
Temple Emmanuel Rabbi Mark Strauss Cohn, Green Street United Methodist Church Reverend Kelly Carpenter, and Interfaith Winston-Salem's Jerry McLeese. I also spoke with Afro-Semitic Experience co-founder, bassist David Shevin. The world-renowned jazz ensemble Afro-Semitic Experience presented a free community jazz jam last month with an interfaith dialogue at First Baptist Church in Winston-Salem. The group also joined the First Baptist Highland Congregation as part of a Lenten service, moved on to Temple Emmanuel for their Shabbat service, and rounded out their stay with a Sunday morning service at Green Street United Methodist Church. All in a day or two's work for the Afro-Semitic Experience. Their concerts are celebrations with great music, storytelling, and a positive and meaningful message, unity in the community. Their new album is Jazz Souls on Fire, and you'll find links at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. On Sunday afternoon, May 18th, Interfaith Winston-Salem is sponsoring an Interfaith Youth Tour. Area middle school and high school students can visit Protestant, Catholic, and Islamic worship centers on one Sunday afternoon, and they'll top off that tour with a free pizza party. Everyone's welcome. This is an opportunity to learn more about the worship traditions and worship places of your neighbors and begin to build new understandings and friendships. The tour begins at Highland Presbyterian Church in Winston-Salem with registration at 1:45. It moves on to Holy Family Catholic Church around 3 o'clock and to the Anur Islamic Center in Clements around 4. You'll find links to more on our website, where you'll also find Rabbi Mark's blog and the latest goings-on at Green Street Church in Winston-Salem. Again, it's WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, back in a minute, singing the blues and loving it next after this short break. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. The 28th Annual Carolina Blues Festival heads to downtown Greensboro this weekend in beautiful Festival Park. It'll feature a veritable who's who of blues talent live in concert all day long and a new segment called The Gospel of the Blues, the brainchild of local scholar, lecturer, performance artist, and storyteller Logie Meacham. Carolina Blues Fest is a 100% grassroots volunteer effort. It's the primary fundraiser for the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society. As you may have guessed, they're dedicated to promoting and preserving this incredible American blues art form. Arguably, none have been more dedicated than PBPS trustee and longtime Carolina Blues Festival chairman John Amberg. He stopped by to talk blues.
Well, like most kids from my generation who grew up on rock and roll, I had four older sisters, so whatever they listened to, I kind of listened to. And there was a lot of Beatles, and then there was a lot of Motown, a lot of Temptations and Diana Ross and Stevie Wonder. And then later on into high school years, there was Bad Company, Led Zeppelin, Humble Pie, and all of these bands, even some of the Southern rock guys who I loved growing up, like Charlie Daniels and the Allman Brothers, they all had this affiliation and affection for the blues. So I kind of fell backwards into the blues, if you kind of get my drift.
Sure.
I sort of listened to the Led Zeppelin and just got interested in where this was coming from. I knew that this wasn't necessarily a Jimmy Page, Robert Plant invention. There had to be something before that. So when I got into college and got into college radio and things like that, then that's when it really kind of blossomed for me. And going to school in Carbondale, Illinois, we'd get a lot of the Chicago guys coming down through to play the clubs, Fenton Robinson, Sun Seals, guys like that. And I had a really good friend at the radio station that did a blues show. And he turned me on to a lot of the Muddy Waters and T-Bone Walker and things like that. And it just sort of carried through in my musical life and in my early career when I started in radio. It really does get under your skin, you know. It's a very elemental, earthy kind of thing, you know, very, very basic and primitive. And when you start kind of going back to where it began and then move forward from there, it's a great little musical journey you can take.
It's a fascinating journey through history as well, and it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, the Mick Jaggers and Robert Plants always said we just wanted to be a blues band.
Yep, most of them did, and what a thrill! Just, you know, one of the great memories I have of the Carolina Blues Festival was meeting John Mayall, who gave life to, you know, I mean, let's face it, Eric Clapton left the Yardbirds to play with John Mayall because the Yardbirds were getting away from the blues. And John Mayall sort of relaunched Eric's career as a blues guy. And then, of course, he did Cream after that and Traffic and Derek and the Dominoes. But the Blues Breakers also had Peter Green, who was in Fleetwood Mac. He also had Mick Taylor, who was in the Rolling Stones. He also had just an amazing amount of guitar players that have played in the Blues Breakers. And just meeting this guy who, you know, just took, you know, the blues to the rock and roll thing like he did was just really, was really a thrill.
Catch a train going down the track. I don't care if I never go back. If the going gets tough, then it's time to go. Robert Johnson told me so.
Let's talk a little bit about this festival, because this is the 28th annual Carolina Blues Festival. It's coming up Saturday, the 17th, Festival Park in downtown Greensboro,
yep,
a city known for great parks all over that area. I found this really surprising that many folks know about the Piedmont as an amazing crossroads for jazz and certainly bluegrass, old-timey music, but we tend to forget about the blues. Talk about the legacy here in this region and the blues.
Well, we were named. Our organization took the name from the style of blues known as the Piedmont Blues. Guys like Reverend Gary Davis and John D. Holman and Blind Boy Fuller is another one. Those are some of the folks that would play the drink houses and the big tobacco barns in Durham and in Winston-Salem. And then, you know, with the Piedmont style of blues, it incorporated that kind of, you know, maybe sort of an Appalachian or mountain feel to it. And the way, you know, when you hear a Piedmont blues song, it's typified by its the finger picking of the guitar. It can be kind of jaunty and lively. Etta Baker was another, she was a female blues guitarist, passed away. She played the Blues Festival back in 1996. She was another one who would play in that style. And our organization kind of grew out of the appreciation and love for the blues that was sort of indigenous to this area.
That's interesting. Yeah, because that is a distinction people don't remember. There's the Mississippi Delta blues. There's the Chicago blues, a whole different ball of wax. Memphis mm-hmm. blues. Piedmont blues being carried on by folks like Big Ron Hunter today.
Yep.
Unique picking style, as you alluded to there. And, well, we'll listen to some. How about that?
I brought some Abe Reed in. Abe is notable for being the only performer who won our the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society has an annual talent contest. We call it the Blues Challenge. And the winner of that Blues Challenge goes to Memphis to compete in the International Blues Challenge, which is a very big deal. And back in 1998, Abe was the winner of our Blues Challenge. He went to Memphis, and he won the International Blues Challenge. He's the only person who ever represented our Blues Society to ever do that.
Well, I ain't gonna let no woman alone. No woman down mess up my mind. Well, I ain't gonna let no woman alone. A woman down mess up my mind. Well, I ain't gonna let no woman alone. Good God Almighty, my mess up my mind. You can go ahead on, baby. Woman, go ahead on your own. Can go ahead on, baby. Wanna go ahead on, y'all. Just as long as my heart's satisfied, you could never make me leave my home. But I ain't gonna let no woman alone. A woman down my up my. God, God, I'm trying to get you every time what I say. I ain't gonna let no woman. A woman down my up my mind. I ain't gonna let no woman alone. Good God Almighty, mess up my mind.
Well, this is kind of at the core of what you all do with the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society. Why is it so important to preserve this music?
I get asked that question so often, and I just feel that when you look historically at American music, you know, maybe with the exception of Native American art forms, Native American music, the blues is truly an American creation. It is truly American folk art. How it began, you know, the pain and the suffering and the hardship back in the antebellum South, and how the field hollers were the way that the people working in the cotton fields, the slaves, would keep in contact with each other. And even going back further to their native soil in Africa, the storytellers were always revered in the villages as like the elder statesmen. I'm no historian. This is just my personal philosophy and my personal observations. But I think the blues tells a story. And that story has been told and is still being told today through all the different styles of blues we just talked about. It's like a collective history. And if we don't tell kids this, if we don't point out to them where this music came from and what it means in the history of our country, African-American history and just American history, I think we're going to be missing out on something. And I think our children will be missing out on something.
Well, how are you singing the gospel of the blues to the young folks today?
Well, we have a lot of amazing local musicians in Greensboro and Winston-Salem and High Point, all over the triad. Guys like Mike Wesolowski, Terry Von Cannon, Chuck Cotton, Sheila and Bubba Kleinfelter. Guys who go into the schools, and Logie Meacham is another one who does that too. And they'll tell stories. They'll talk about the history of the blues. And then the best part about those performances is they'll actually get up and perform the blues and get the kids to come up with them. They'll like have a guitar that's tuned open so that the kids can get up and strum the guitar. And they'll get up and dance, and they'll learn about a blues shuffle. They'll learn about a slow blues. It's a real education for them from a heritage and historical standpoint, and also from a performance art standpoint.
And tell me about this, The Gospel of the Blues. I love that title, by the way. It's a nice one.
That's Logie Meacham. He's a genius. This guy is a scholar, a lecturer, a performance artist, a songwriter, and a storyteller, all wrapped up in one. And we've invited Logie to come to our blues festival and do this performance called The Gospel of the Blues. It's going to be in between the main acts on the stage, and he's going to be doing some storytelling and performance. And he'll have Peter May, the great Winston-Salem blues guy, another guy who is very well-schooled in Piedmont blues. He's going to be accompanying him. So we think this is going to bring a little bit of depth and education and, you know, a little bit of artistry, if you will, to the show.
Set the scene for us. What can we expect at this year's festival?
Festival Park is a beautiful area right in the heart of downtown Greensboro, right next to the Cultural Arts Center on Davie Street. And it's family-friendly. Children 12 and under are admitted free. You're invited to bring your lawn chair, your blanket, your beach towel. Set up shop under the tent or outside the tent if you want to soak up some rays. And we'll have a big stage, and we'll have bands coming on and off all day long. It starts at 2 o'clock. It ends about 10:30. Our headliner this year is a great West Coast blues band, Rod Piazza and the Mighty Flyers. They are making their fourth appearance at the Carolina Blues Festival. The last time they played was 2006. Rod is a world-class harmonica player, and his wife, Miss Honey Piazza, is an amazing blues piano player. There's something for all blues fans.
Nice.
Something for everybody.
Keeping the blues alive. Well, hats off to you, John, for keeping it alive, and we sure appreciate you.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
They call me Ms. Dr. Feelgood. I said, hey, hey, hey. They call me Ms. Dr.
Piedmont Blues Preservation Society trustee and Carolina Blues Festival chairman John Amberg. The festival is Saturday, May 17th at beautiful Festival Park in downtown Greensboro. The Carolina Blues Fest is the longest-running blues fest in the Southeast, coming up on 30 years, and the stage will be graced once again with many a blues legend, with eight performers on stage throughout the day, kids under 12 get in free, and it's all under the big tent, rain or shine. Carolina Blues Festival 2014 is the primary fundraiser for the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society. So if you love your blues, you can find out more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
For one night only, I'm in your town. So come on, peoples, and gather around. Come and let's start to feel good. I say, hey, hey, hey.
I'm David Ford. Time for another short break before we return with, you guessed it, more blues. That's right, but this time it's blues of the healing variety. Greensboro College faculty artist Ted Efremoff and musician Dave Fox are back with the Healing Blues CD Project next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. The Healing Blues Project invites folks experiencing things such as homelessness, post-traumatic stress disorder, or abuse to share their story about the challenges they face with a participating songwriter. The songwriter collaborates with the storyteller in writing and performing their song for a fascinating new recording project. The Healing Blues CD, due out later this spring, memorializes the personal struggles of nearly a dozen participants in living music. The Healing Blues Project is an interdisciplinary collaboration between Greensboro College faculty cross-disciplinary artist Ted Efremoff, composer pianist Dave Fox, and art students Julia Fergus and Gabrielle Harbin. Also involved are the Interactive Resource Center, a day resource center for people experiencing homelessness, Greensboro area songwriters, and storytellers from the Greensboro community.
I come from a place where there's family and love. I hold on to my faith that there's help from above. I've seen good times and bad. I've been down on my street.
Talk about your personal interest in social justice. Where does it come from?
Well, I grew up in the Soviet Union. I was born in 1964. And as a kid growing up in Russia, I already kind of saw that, especially coming from my family's sort of disengagement from the government, let's say, from the Soviet powers that be, I saw that things weren't right. You know, and I thought that, you know, why can't we travel outside of Russia, for instance? You know, it's closed society. And in 1990, I went back to Russia and I witnessed a huge change. I came from the Soviet Union in 1980. And when I came back in 1990, I saw homelessness, for instance, which you never saw in the Soviet Union. I saw a lot of change that was disheartening in a way. And that kind of led me to a path of creating art based on my sort of political or emotional feelings and beliefs. Open Art Society sent out a call to artists for installations done in downtown Greensboro in either abandoned storefronts or empty storefronts. She was working with the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society, and I think it was kind of a workup to the Blues Festival that's in May. And so she asked artists to create installations in these empty storefronts that would be dealing with the blues. My idea was to create not a static installation, but a kind of a blues cafe where musicians would get together with storytellers and create blues songs. And then thinking about the nature of the blues, it's sort of about memorializing your own suffering. I thought, well, who are the people suffering in this city right now? And I automatically thought about homeless folks and people at IRC or people like veterans with PTSD. So I thought, well, why don't we get these people together and hook them up with blues musicians and then have them create these songs? So that's when I kind of wrote a little proposal for the project, and then I got in touch with Dave Fox, and Dave said, I love the idea, and I just happen to know pretty much every blues musician in the area. And he jumped right on it, so we've forged this collaboration.
And Dave, you have one of the most varied sets of musical influences of anyone I know. Could you give listeners a sample of some of the biggies in your life?
People like Mozart and Beethoven and Schumann and Brahms, Bill Evans, Miles Davis, and even some of the real crazy out there people like Cecil Taylor and Butch Morris, who's the guy who came up with conduction, where you get a bunch of people together who've never played together before, and just by hand signals you create a piece on the spot. And then of course the Beatles. I mean, it's like, I guess it's, I don't remember who said it, but anything is good, I like it. And I guess I kind of don't feel bound by barriers. People say this has to be this genre, it has to be that genre. I kind of just, if it's good, I like it, and I like to explore how sounds are put together.
The late, great Duke Ellington said there are two types of music. You know,
good and bad.
Good music and the other kind,
yeah.
Whatever it is. So what's the draw for you in this kind of social justice aspect of this particular project?
Well, because I haven't really done too much of that before. I guess, like a lot of artists, not that there's anything wrong with this, to be an artist, whether it's music or visual artist, filmmaker, whatever, you have to spend a lot of time with yourself, honing your discipline, getting better at what you do. A lot of alone time, a lot of me time, a lot of kind of ego time, you know. And Ted brought this idea up, and I'd read of other people doing things similar to this. I thought, man, this is a way I can kind of do something unselfish to kind of maybe give back to the community. And that's kind of what I saw my role as, to get all these other great blues musicians that I'd gotten to know over the past few years in Greensboro and Winston-Salem, give them the same opportunity. So I'd call people up and they would say, yeah, I'd love to do that. And then they'd come out for the first session, they'd meet a storyteller, and they were just having a blast doing it. And everyone who I've called and everyone who's done it has just had the best things to say about it. Like, they're really, I don't want to say it's a life-changing experience, but it's close to that. Like, people are really getting into this. They love the idea of using their art to help someone else out.
Sometimes my voice isn't strong enough to share how I really feel, so I write. Sometimes I feel invisible, but my words prove I exist, so I write. There are good days, there are bad days, I remind myself to pray. My words are like an anchor that won't let me slip away, so I write.
Tell me about the IRC, the Interactive Resource Center. What is it, and what do they do?
So the IRC is a sort of a day center for homeless folks who can come in and take a shower or get some job training or participate in an arts activity. And the one thing I saw that really made the place stand apart was that there was a kind of an agency for homeless folks to have at the IRC. For instance, they have a artist collaborative. So homeless folks who are artists create art and run a collaborative. So any money they make, some of it goes back into the collaborative. And I think what Liz Seymour's vision is to give folks that are kind of down an agency to support themselves and to support themselves in community. And I think that's what's happening at IRC, and it's very exciting to watch.
How is Greensboro College supporting IRC and this project?
Greensboro College is the entity through which we are participating in this project, as we're both professors at Greensboro College, and we're engaging our students. So I have a couple of art students involved in the project. Dave is going to have a couple of music students involved in the project. We're going to be involving some history students. So, you know, I think it's we're getting marketing support and we're getting institutional support from the college to kind of put together a body of work, let's say, in relationship to this project.
Have both of you all been involved in, either as a fly on the wall or participant in, the collaborative process between storyteller and musician? Have you been just facilitating that, Dave, or have you actually sat in on one of those sessions?
I've sat in on a couple of them, and then I decided that the first day, as I saw how the project was going to grow, to not actually write a song myself, just act as the overall producer for the whole thing.
Tell me about that back and forth.
So we're teaming up blues songwriters with either a homeless person or someone who has trauma in their life. We call them the storyteller. So the storyteller tells a story to the blues songwriter, and the two of them together are getting credit for the song that's coming out. One of the blues musicians just brought a list of questions with them and just asked them what happened in your early life and stuff like that. I can't remember what all the questions were. But they told me later that once they asked the first question, they never asked any other question because the person kept talking, and they found out later they had answered all the questions they had. Anyway, others have been poems written by a storyteller already. They would bring them with them and say, well, here's a poem I wrote. And they would stand up and read it. And one of them was just so moving and so powerful that one of the songwriters right there said, well I'm going to take that. And there's been two or three instances like that.
We talked a little bit early on about the reaction you've gotten, at least signing up and jumping on board with the project, from the blues musicians themselves. But what sorts of feedback have you gotten from the storytellers, these people that are going through so much stress in their life, about this project?
One reaction in particular that's been documented and was in a Greensboro News article, where Greensboro News and Record brought a photographer down to the IRC, and the songwriter came down there with his guitar, and a friend of his was singing it, and the storyteller heard the song for the very first time, based on his story. And it's a very moving kind of story because he talks about a picture of his dad that he carries with him and a cross that he carries with him that his mom gave with him, I think, something like that. And they were able to put the lines of those two things in the song. And we heard those, his face just lit up and he was dancing and he was moving around. So far, it's based on that, the reactions have been very overwhelmingly positive.
That storyteller's name is Shannon Stewart, and the songwriters are Terry and Janice Von Cannon. And we have set up some what we call Healing Blues Cafes at Elsewhere Museum, where the songwriters and storytellers come together and the songwriters perform the songs for the first time. And when Terry performed the song, Shannon was not there. So then Terry decided to come down to the IRC the next day and perform for Shannon. So it was quite a moving experience.
I've got a son, he don't know me. I gotta lose these streets before I let him see me. This homemade cross and the picture ID, this makeshift tent, it was a home to me. Halfway house, picture ID, for my daddy could give to me. I'm walking.
Greensboro College faculty cross-disciplinary artist Ted Efremoff and composer-pianist Dave Fox. We've been sampling from early takes from the Healing Blues CD. The last stories have recently been gathered, and the collaborators intend to complete the recording by the end of summer 2014. The Healing Blues CD release, with the fundraiser concert benefiting the Interactive Resource Center, is currently in the books for spring of 2015. And you'll find links to the project's Kickstarter campaign and more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, that's all for today's show. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. And our intern is Andre Wallace. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend and archived episodes at WFDD.org. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And as always, you can drop us a line with questions, comments, and suggestions. That email address is triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.